Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Karl Rove's Fight Club, the title of a piece in Politico by Kenneth Vogel, Politico's chief investigative reporter. He investigated the Weaver Terrorist Group, a coalition of GOP money bundlers and kingmakers who helped Republicans retake the House in 2010 and have even bigger plans for 2012. We will discuss this difficult assignment for a reporter since the Weaver Terrorist Group follow the Fight Club rule of not talking about who they are and what they do. Then we will speak with Paul Starr, a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of sociology and public affairs at Princeton, who wrote an article back in January for The New Republic, "The Healthcare Mandate Really Was a Mistake," which argued that the president miscalculated about the courts, the politics, and the policy itself. He is the author of a new book, Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar American Struggle Over Healthcare Reform. Then finally, we'll explore what the president and the Canadian prime minister said little about yesterday, after yesterday's Three Amigos summit. That is the contentious Keystone XL pipeline that is no longer about U.S.-Canadian relations, but domestic U.S. politics. Roderick Tremblay joins us. He's a professor emeritus of economics and international finance at the University of Montreal and was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North America Free Trade Agreement. Joining us now is Kenneth Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence. He has covered politics and government at all levels, from small-town cop shops and school boards to state houses, Congress, and the presidential campaign, traveling during 2008 with the campaigns of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, and Joe Biden. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kenneth Vogel.
Hey, great to be with you.
And the Fight Club analogy about the first thing is you don't talk about it, and the second thing you don't talk about it. Clearly, a difficult assignment for a reporter. Do you think you cracked the nut? Because apparently this was the week where they huddled behind closed doors to discuss how to spend hundreds of millions to defeat President Barack Obama and congressional Democrats.
Yeah, that's right, Ian. It is a tough nut to crack. And the interesting thing is they reveal the presence and the existence of these ongoing meetings only after the 2010 election, when, of course, they had great success in coordinating to an unprecedented extent some of these, typically warring factions of the conservative movement and the Republican Party, bringing to the table groups that hadn't always played well together in the past, including the Karl Rove sort of establishment groups, some of which I should say were new, but also some of the Koch brothers-funded, more libertarian, fringy groups that were more focused on free market, libertarianism as sort of a pure ideology, or not interested in some of the electoral machinations that had driven the Republican Party during the Bush years, as well as pro-life groups, you know, groups that oppose abortion rights, groups that support gun rights. So these are very disparate groups that Karl Rove nonetheless brought together, and the reason why we found out about it is because they wanted to do a little bit of chest thumping after 2010 to show we had this great effect on the midterm election, swinging them in Republicans' favor and allowing Republicans to retake the House, and doing a little bit of predictive boasting about what impact they were going to have in 2010. And so we decided we would try to catch up with them and see what the status of their meetings were. And we found out that there was this meeting occurring. Actually went down outside of the office building in downtown Washington where the meeting is held, in the American Crossroads offices, which is one of the super PACs started by Karl Rove, and tried to spot folks coming in and out of it, and didn't really see a whole lot of folks that I could recognize, but could have been a different entrance that they were using.
Well, Kenneth Vogel, it comes as a surprise to me, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners, that within these Republican king-making, money-bundling circles, Karl Rove is considered an establishment figure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he, of course, was the establishment and was the Republican Party to some extent during the Bush years. But afterwards, he kind of slinked off a little bit, was not particularly well regarded. Certainly the Tea Party movement in 2009 and 2010 saw President Bush, the Bush administration, and Bush's political operatives of course personified by Karl Rove, as an adulteration of conservative principles. And their movement really embraced a sort of free market, small government conservatism that they thought that Bush and Rove had steered the Republican Party away from. However, the Republican Party was adrift after Bush. They ended up in 2008 with John McCain as a nominee who many conservatives, frankly, were leery of, if not detested outright. They thought he was too moderate. And so what we saw was an opening that Rove and some of his fellow Bush-era GOP operatives, including Ed Gillespie, managed to seize on to create these new types of groups, super PACs and 501c4 nonprofit groups. And, of course, they were aided significantly in this quest to build a sort of shadow Republican Party by the federal court decisions in 2010 that really opened the floodgates to some extent for new unlimited corporate and even secret money that has funded this infrastructure that Karl Rove is the unofficial head of.
Well, Kenneth Vogel, you covered the Sarah Palin campaign in 2008, and of course, she to some extent made up for the leeriness that you just mentioned that the Republican right felt about John McCain. She also hosted NBC's Today Show and basically called for Republican voters in primaries, and of course, we're just watching as the primary results are about to come in Wisconsin, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. She called for Republican voters to be bold, which is another way of saying vote for Santorum, I guess. Is that dichotomy there? Because it looks like if Romney wraps this up, do you think that the Tea Party types that are also hauling in some serious money, are they going to be truculent about supporting Romney, or the divisions that you wrote about in your article, the Karl Rove Fight Club? Are they going to heal?
That's really the open question here, and a huge question for conservatives and Republicans headed into 2012, because of course the establishment, the extra party establishment, as represented by Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie and some of these other operatives, is seen as very much behind Mitt Romney, and some conservatives, Tea Party types, evangelicals, etc., who were naturally suspicious of Mitt Romney, also were suspicious of Karl Rove from the get-go, and believe that he, to some extent, had his thumb on the scale trying to tilt the playing field of the Republican presidential primary in Mitt Romney's favor. If Mitt Romney comes away with it, I think that you will see some of the big money that had coalesced behind Tea Party groups through the Koch brothers and others, as well as some evangelical Christian right groups, being a little bit reluctant to come to the table to support Mitt Romney. And if they don't come to the table to support Mitt Romney and are leery about going in with Karl Rove on some of his efforts to support Romney, it also stands to reason that they might be reluctant to take direction from Karl Rove and this Weaver terrorist group on some of the congressional races, and that could really threaten this newfound yet fragile truce that we saw Karl Rove bring together in 2010.
Again, I'm speaking with Kenneth Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence. So, Kenneth Vogel, give us an idea of the big players here. You've got Karl Rove, and of course he's got Crossroads. He's also got Crossroads GPS, which is one of those 501c4 nonprofits that allow the big donors to remain anonymous, all in the name, I think, of what charity or something. I mean, that's extraordinary.
Social welfare.
Social welfare, right. And then you've got the super PAC belonging to Eric Cantor, YG, standing for Young Guns. And Cantor seems to be, quite flagrantly ambitious, isn't he? He seems to have humiliated the Boehner on a couple of occasions and seems to be pretty much on his own reservation, isn't he?
Yeah, and what's interesting there, Ian, is that Cantor, who, for all extents and purposes, is quite similar ideologically to John Boehner. They're both sort of mainstream Republicans, country club Republicans is a term that you hear thrown about derisively by Tea Partiers and some of the more conservative elements of the Republican base. Yet, in spite of that, Eric Cantor has aligned himself with the Tea Party Republicans, the big freshman class of Republicans that swept into Washington on this Tea Party wave in the 2010 midterms. And you talk to folks who are Republican insiders, and they say Cantor goes where the action is. He doesn't necessarily go where his ideology takes him. He goes to where he thinks that there is a political will and there is political power. And perhaps as an extension of that, you know, using that rationale could be used to explain why he, the last couple years, has gone to the Koch brothers, donor confab, most recently out in Indian Wells, California, and was schmoozing with these donors at this event that is regarded as one of the preeminent places at which sort of conservative politicians are able to tap into these big donor circles. Of course, now that those big donor circles are all the more powerful because of this federal court decision. And lo and behold, Cantor has this new, it's not just a super PAC, he's got a whole network of new groups branded with this YG branding, which stands for Young Guns, which is his sort of self-created political persona. And he is a new player at these Weaver Terrorist Group meetings, yet some are already raising concerns that he's off on his own supporting Republican challengers or younger Republican Tea Party Republicans in contested GOP primaries, like the one that recently occurred in Illinois, where he got behind a freshman Republican running against a 10-term incumbent, and Boehner and some other Republicans were rather upset with this, but Cantor's candidate was victorious. And so you have to think that that adds some chips to Cantor's column, at least when it comes to big donors who are considering where the political action is. Cantor has established himself as a real player in that regard.
So, Kenneth Vogel, though, does that mean that Cantor and the Koch brothers, isn't this a bit of an irony that Rove and Dick Armey helped elect, I think, 60 out of the 65 freshmen in those that were elected in 2010 into the House to change it Republican were Tea Party, I think. Are they going to now you've got Cantor and the Kochs wanting to elect more Tea Party people? Is Rove out of the business? And what is the choice? Why would the Kochs prefer these Tea Party Republicans as opposed to the traditional ones?
Well, I think depending on who you talk to, you hear two very different explanations. Certainly, liberals and critics of the amount of money that is now flowing into politics see some self-interested motivation behind the Koch's decisions and the Koch's political efforts, suggesting that some of the folks who they have helped elect are more likely to enact legislation that would boost their bottom line, that being sort of most acutely chemicals and oil and energy businesses that they have huge stakes in. Then you talk to Koch sympathizers, and they say, no, for decades the Kochs have been at the leading edge of the sort of libertarian wing of the Republican Party, and they want to elect candidates that share their small government, free enterprise first mentality, and those may happen to be the candidates who also are going to oppose the types of regulation that are onerous on the Koch's businesses, but that is merely a side effect, and they point out that in some cases the Kochs have opposed measures that could help them, such as ethanol subsidies, of which they are a leading critic.
Well, but surely if that were the case, Kenneth Vogel, the Kochs would have supported Ron Paul, which they clearly haven't, if that's their ideological predilection.
Yeah, that's a good point, and certainly Ron Paul has had trouble making inroads at all with big money types in the Republican Party. You saw for a little bit there were some Silicon Valley libertarians and San Francisco libertarians who were supporting a super PAC that favored Ron Paul. But Ron Paul, in many ways, is as close to the Obama model of fundraising, that being collecting lots of small donations, not necessarily from wealthy people, and pooling them to make a larger pot that enables him to make a difference in conservative politics. But you're right, he has had no support from the Koch brothers or others who have long supported the libertarian movement in American politics.
So let's just go through some of the amounts of money that these GOP groups that belong to the Fight Club that you've been uncovering, and Weaver Terrace being Karl Rove's home address in Washington, D.C. $300 million is Crossroads' target for this election. $200 million is the target for the Kochs. $200 million. $50 million is the target for the Chamber of Commerce. And then there are other groups: Americans for Job Security, Americans for Tax Reform, which is an anti-abortion rights group, and the Republican Jewish Coalition. They've already been meeting with Adelson and Norm Coleman and company. The indications there are that Adelson's going to throw a lot of money Romney's way. Isn't there a sea change there?
Yeah, and they're certainly hoping that some of these groups that would seem to be sort of from different factions will nonetheless come together behind whoever the eventual Republican nominee is, or the group supporting the eventual Republican nominee, who at this point appears almost certain to be Mitt Romney. Nonetheless, there are some of these groups that are sort of wild cards, including the groups that are backed by the Koch brothers, such as Americans for Prosperity, which you mentioned, the 60-plus Association, which is a group that sees itself as the conservative alternative to AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, the American Future Fund, Americans for Limited Government. All these groups are registered under Section 501c4 of the tax code, which allows them to accept unlimited sums without disclosing their donors. Of course, we should add that there was a district court decision in Washington, D.C. that was handed down just Friday evening that could change that and could require some of these secret donor-funded groups to disclose who their donors are who fund the very specific types of election ads. So that's sort of a wild card that's out there. I don't envision that decision having an impact before the 2012 election. Nonetheless, that could change the way that that money and corporate money and secret money is flowing into politics right now.
And what about these other players that were very influential in 2010, Grover Norquist, Americans for Tax Reform, and the Club for Growth? What kind of money are they talking about, and who are they throwing their money behind?
Well, the Club for Growth is another good example, because they've long been sort of regarded as rabble-rousers in the Republican Party, and they have supported conservative challengers to incumbent Republicans in primaries, and they say that they're going to continue to do that. They were one of those ones that surprised a lot of people after the fact, after the 2010 midterm elections, when these Weaver Terrace meetings were sort of revealed and Karl Rove and his cohorts bragged about all these disparate groups that they brought to the table. It raised a lot of eyebrows when it was revealed that the Club for Growth was among them, because they're not regarded as playing particularly well with the Republican establishment. And when I put this to the president of the Club for Growth, a former congressman, Chris Jacola, from Indiana, he said, well, we're probably not going back to those meetings anytime soon. We might go back to them come the general election, but right now we're very focused on these primaries, including primaries, intra-Republican party primaries, where their goal is to pull the Republican Party further to the right. That's really the distinction between groups like the Club for Growth and some of the Koch brothers-funded groups and the Rove groups. The Rove groups and those in the establishment are really of a pragmatic mentality. They want to win first and foremost. The ideology is secondary. If they have to field a moderate candidate, like, say, a Mike Castle, the former congressman who lost that Republican primary to Christine O'Donnell, the Tea Party favorite in Delaware in 2010, they would rather have a moderate. If it's a conservative state, they would rather have a free market conservative. And the Kochs and Club for Growth and some of these other groups see the Rove mentality, that pragmatism, as sort of anathema to the founding principles of conservatism. those are the fault lines that we're looking at heading into 2012.
Well, just in closing, Kenneth Vogel, what about these groups like Themis or Themis, or whatever, I'm not sure the pronunciation, and Data Trust? It seems, in terms of targeting and these vast lists of voters and their tastes and habits, what they read, what restaurants they go to, the whole, the enormous amount of data mining has been going on. It seems that Romney's already employing this technology, isn't he?
Yeah, he is trying to, and what he's doing is more of a social media advertising type of tactic, and that is useful. That's certainly useful at this stage where you're trying to identify, you're trying to basically convince those who are on the fence to support you, and you're doing that by using all this data to determine sort of where you're what the universe of folks who might be persuadable to come on board and convince you. However, when you get to the general election, what you need are these much more vast lists that include all this commercial data, which is very expensive, not just maintaining the list, but buying the commercial data to supplement the list, stuff like magazine subscriptions, like you mentioned, concealed carry permits for conservatives, there's just a wealth of these things, and that's how you get out the vote, because it's not enough to have someone's email address or Facebook profile if you want to send people door-to-door determining which doors are the ones that they should be knocking on to try to drive out the vote for their candidate in the general election. And that's where you get into these voter targeting, micro-targeting efforts like Themis and Data Trust, stuff like the RNC has been trying to do. And that's really where, if you talk to political professionals, elections are won and lost.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Kenneth Vogel.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Kenneth Vogel, the chief investigative reporter for Politico, who tracks the confluence of money, politics, and influence. He has covered politics and government at all levels, from small-town cop shops and school boards to state houses, Congress, and the presidential campaign trail, traveling during the 2008 campaign with Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Sarah Palin, and Joe Biden. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about whether or not the healthcare mandate really was a mistake. Behind